the New American Magazine. We're standing outside the SDG Media Zone, and Melissa Fleming, the UN Undersecretary General for Communications, she's the communications czar, the top communications boss of the United Nations, is talking about the importance of journalism and a free press and an information integrity so that we can stop the proliferation of misinformation, disinformation, and hate speech. We've got an important question because she announced in 2022 at the World Economic Forum a partnership with Google to silence voices that were countering the UN's narrative. Here she is talking about this.
You know, we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we'd Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. So we're becoming much more proactive. You know, we own the science, and we think that the world, you know, should know it, and the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active in.
So we want to find out, what is the criteria that the UN and Google are using to silence people who are putting out information that contradicts their narrative? Let's go see what Melissa has to say. Melissa, hi, I'm Alex Newman with the New American Magazine. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the partnership that the UN has with Google to try to squelch disinformation and misinformation. You talked about it at the 2022 World Economic Forum.
Sorry, I'm not sure who you are.
Alex Newman with the New American. I'm a journalist.
I don't know what the New American is.
Sorry, we can't do it right now. You give us 2 minutes.
Sorry, we just shut down the session.
Okay, well, I can ask her away from the session.
Yeah, and also if you go through one of us, we can connect you, schedule and stuff.
Okay, I just have a quick question. Yeah. My name is Alex Newman. I'm a reporter with the New American. Yeah, this is a panel about journalism, right?
Yeah. Would you like maybe to give me your card or something?
I could, but I'd rather just ask my question.
Because we're a bit pressed for time.
Are you?
Because we need to meet with some of the guests here.
I don't have the card for the organization I'm representing today, but I'll be happy to give you my contact information.
Okay.
Yep.
The New American or just...
How come they can just ask her questions and I can't? I don't understand.
We had planned this before.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
We're not discriminating against media outlets, are we?
No.
Oh, okay. I hope not. It seems like everybody can ask her questions except me, huh?
I don't think that's true.
It's not?
In fact, I don't think that this was even... She doesn't even have time for this, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my cameraman, yeah.
Okay, but I'm just facilitating the discussion.
Yeah, we're not recording you. We're trying to ask her a few questions about a subject that's of great interest to millions of Americans. We are recording. Yeah, of course.
Don't you think that we should ask my permission before?
No, we're in a public place. This is America. I guess you're not American, huh?
No, I'm not American, but I understand.
But in America, when you're in a public place and you're a journalist and you're asking questions, it's obviously...
I'm also a journalist.
Oh, yeah?
I trained, and I always ask permission before I...
Well, I didn't even want to talk to you. I was actually trying to ask Melissa Fleming a question.
You want to start recording that, guys?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. So, I have your contacts.
Okay.
And,
we have some questions that are of interest to millions of Americans who pay a third of the budget of the United Nations. And it would be very good if we could get them answered. So, whenever you have a chance, please contact me. I'll be here until tonight. And we very much appreciate the opportunity to speak with Ms. Fleming.
Tonight might be a bit tight because, I wish you had the opportunity to...
We can do it by Zoom later, whatever works good for you guys. But these are very important questions that a lot of people want to know the answer to, including our readers in Congress, our readers in the state legislatures. A lot of people want to know. So thank you. Wow, clearly not a lot of interest in revealing the formula and the censorship mechanism with Google. I'm not surprised. I wouldn't want to talk about it if I had said that either. But there you go. This is the summit of the future. This is what they mean when they talk about freedom of information, freedom of speech. It's for them, not for you.
Wow, absolutely incredible stuff. That was Alex Newman. He joins me on the other side to break down what we just saw and all of the other policies being pursued by the UN, as well as a variety, a gigantic cacophony of NGOs working together to silence dissent around the world and solidify forever their control over the minds of humanity. Stay with us.
I've been telling listeners for months that InfoWars is very close to being shut down. And now people are taking it serious because it's all over the news that InfoWars will be sold at auction coming up on November 16th. Now listen, we've got Patriot buyers. Hopefully they're able to win the bid. But regardless, we're going to continue on. And that means we need sponsors for whatever new organizations get set up. So if you want to keep us on air one way or the other and checkmate the New World Order, go to our sponsors and support them. The AlexJonesStore.com for amazing t-shirts and ball caps to spread the word in the third dimension and fund the operation, and also go to drjonesnaturals.com. That's separate from InfoWars as well. They're sponsors of InfoWars right now. So you support InfoWars, whether it stays in the air or not, and you support sponsors going forward if we've got to set up a new operation and I'll work for somebody else. I don't intend on giving up. I won't give up. I'll never give up, but I could give out if you don't support us. These are great products. You need them. Go to the alexjonesstore.com and drjonesnaturals.com. Get great products and keep us on the air. God bless you. Now take action.
Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour is on here at American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Alex Newman and Andrew Moeller. Alex Newman is the award-winning international journalist, educator, author, and consultant that you've seen on this show many, many times. He's joined today by Andrew Moeller, who writes for The New American and is chief of operations at the Liberty Sentinel. You can follow Alex Newman at AlexNewman_JOU and follow Andrew at Andrew1Moeller on X. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great to be here. Thank you for having us, Harrison.
It's my pleasure. An incredible video we saw in that first 5 minutes, in case people didn't catch it. Some people on radio don't get the first 5 minutes. Walk us through what just happened to you as you were there at the UN in New York City talking about the summit of the future. You tried to get some questions answered as to what their plans are for the control of the flow of information and were shut down entirely. Tell us what that experience was like.
Sure. Well, thank you, Harrison. So Melissa Fleming is the Undersecretary General for Communications at the UN. It's basically the vice president for propaganda, if you will, and very important lady. And she has been on a mission to silence dissenting voices. And in fact, in 2022, we showed a little clip of that. She was at the World Economic Forum and she was bragging about how the UN now had a partnership with Google to silence information that they didn't want out there. In particular, she was talking about climate, but this is true across the spectrum, COVID, climate, globalism, feminism, you name it. And as part of this partnership, Google has rigged its algorithm to silence people like us. I'll give you an example. In 2015, the UN approved the Sustainable Development Goals, the 2030 Agenda. They called it the Master Plan for Humanity. And I did an article about it for the New American Magazine. And for many years, it was the number one result. When you typed in 2030 Agenda, Agenda 2030, Sustainable Development Goals, it was the number one result on Google. That's because that was the article that everybody was referencing. It was the article that people had picked up and posted all over the place. It was the most popular article. And then the UN stuff came later. Well, now you can go look for that article. You can even put the exact headline in. It was something like UN 2030 Agenda, Sustainable Development Goals, A Recipe for Global Socialism. And you can't find it. It's on page like 12, whatever, depending on where you search from. So this is very deliberate, very strategic. And in the Pact for the Future that they adopted at this UN summit, they over and over again call for information integrity. They commit the UN and all of its members to wage war on misinformation, disinformation, hate speech. This is what they mean, right? It's not that it has to be inaccurate. It's that it contradicts the UN agenda. So they recognize people aren't buying their lies anymore. So now their solution is silence the truth, and then maybe people will believe the lies. That won't work either. You guys, of course, are experiencing your own version of an effort to silence the truth with the outrageous attack against InfoWars. But folks, they want total control of information, and this is all a big part of that.
Yeah. And like you said, it doesn't have to be false. In fact, you can be saying the same things they're saying if you just say it in a different tone. If you, you know, instead of say, what a wonderful idea to fight disinformation, if instead you say, no, look, they're talking about censorship. This is, you know, anti-First Amendment. You can actually say the exact same things that they're saying. If you're just not for it, then you'll be shut down. And of course, they're doing this through a public-private partnership. Andrew, explain to people how this is the tactic that they're using and why they're using this tactic of using places like Google or Facebook or previously Twitter to carry out their censorship program in order to get around restrictions like the Constitution and the First Amendment.
Yeah, well, thanks, Harrison. It was really interesting going there. You know, I'll just preface all of this with I'd never been to the UN headquarters before, so this was a new experience for me as a journalist. And by the way, we were
Shoot, it looks like we might have lost his feed. Alex, are you still there?
I am, yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, both of us are in Florida. And so it may be that he's having a little trouble, you know, all the power lines knocked out and everything. That may be the issue. But yeah, so being at the UN headquarters for this, it was more control than we had ever seen. I mean, it was just out of control. They would not let you go places without minders. Andrew got a real taste of that when he tried to take a picture of a piece of Soviet art. And this Chinese lady barked at him, hey, you can't take pictures without permission. Right. That's the kind of environment. And then we tried to talk to Melissa Fleming, as you saw in the video, and she says, oh, well, I don't recognize you, so I can't talk to you. And then she proceeds to talk to several additional journalists with a big smile on her face. So it's truly an abomination. I hope we have Andrew back.
I do think we have Andrew back. Sorry, we lost you there, Andrew. I think if you can read me, although it looks like he may have frozen up again. Yeah, we're having trouble with Andrew, so we may have to disconnect and reconnect with him. The crew will work on that. So Alex, just talking to you here until we get a clean feed from Andrew. It's typical, isn't it? When they say you will own nothing and you will have no privacy, while meanwhile, they're taking private helicopters to chateaus in Switzerland and you're not even allowed to know who's there. It's pretty typical, isn't it? That they want open, free information. They will say these things over and over, but that's just for themselves. I mean, they want total control. It's just, simply put, it's different rules for them than it is for us.
It is. And Orwell really got it right. You know, in 1984, he talks about, you know, peace is slavery, slavery is freedom, war is peace. That is the attitude at the UN. And people need to understand what they mean with these terms. Like when they talk about Melissa Fleming, when we tried to talk to her, had just finished up on a panel discussion about the importance of a free press. And yet she doesn't actually want to talk to the press if they have a real question. When they talk about human rights, right, this is a cornerstone of this pact for the future. People need to understand the UN means the opposite of what you think of when you think of rights. Right? Our founding fathers in America enshrined God-given rights. They said our rights come from our creator. Government exists to protect those rights. In the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is enshrined as a cornerstone of this pact for the future, they say your rights come from government. Your rights come from the United Nations. They come from these international agreements. They can be limited under virtually any pretext. Article 29 says they can't be used contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. So it's a total reversal of what we think of when we think of human rights. And that is par for the course here when it comes to the UN. They talk about peace troops when they're talking about their military forces, famous for raping women and children around the world, slaughtering civilians. It is a grotesque organization. And you're exactly right also, Harrison, where they can say these things, right? The World Economic Forum can come out and say, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. But when we say, hey, they're saying you can own nothing and you'll be happy, then they say, oh, well, that's misinformation. We're going to delete you. It's like, no, we're just reporting what you said.
Yeah.
Right? It's truly amazing.
It is totally upside down world. And I understand we do have Andrew Mueller back now. Sorry, you got cut off there, Andrew. You were talking about sort of your first experience at the UN headquarters in New York City. If you could just pick it up off the top there.
Hey, you guys got me?
Yep, hear you now.
Yeah, so as I was trying to say at the beginning there, you know, we were accredited journalists. We had our press passes with us. You know, I'm holding mine up right here. We were legitimate accredited journalists, but yet we were treated like just hobos coming off the street to ask these, you know, different UN higher ups questions. And one thing I thought was really interesting, and Alex touched on it, was the UN war on information. And they talked about during one of these SDG Sustainable Development Goals breakouts, they talked about the information ecosystems. And you kind of think of an ecosystem like our climate, right? Well, they say our information ecosystems are polluted with toxins. And who are those toxins? Well, citizen journalists. And they went on to talk about how they need to bolster state media. You know, think of the BBC, think of NPR. And they actually had a representative there from the BBC. And he even said, citizen journalists aren't bad for maybe, you know, bringing a topic to light, but they're really problematic when it comes to confirming information. And that's really where the state needs to come in. And in the Pact for the Future, they talk about this. This is Objective 3. I'll read.
Shoot. It's the hurricane is messing us up. Objective 3. Do you know what he's referencing there, Alex?
Yeah, so Objective 3 deals with this whole concept of information integrity, Harrison. And again, I would encourage people to read the Pact for the Future themselves, because it is such a significant document in the future transformation of the UN from what they're calling UN 1 to UN 2.0. And information integrity is a critical part of this. What they mean by information integrity is all voices like yours, all voices like mine must be eliminated, must be scrubbed, because we're putting out misinformation, disinformation, hate speech, and malinformation. And so they have a lot of different tactics for how they're going to do that. But the Pact for the Future does commit every government, every one of the UN's 193 member states, and the UN to waging war on misinformation, disinformation, and hate speech. And let's break those down a little bit, right? Hate speech was a concept introduced into the UN lexicon by the Soviet Union in the 1970s, basically to describe speech that the Soviets hated, anti-communist speech, Christian speech, etc. And we don't have to speculate about where this is going, Harrison. I was living in Sweden when the Swedish government did an investigation into the Bible. And they determined that the Bible is, in fact, a violation of Swedish hate speech laws. We've all seen the videos of people in the United Kingdom, street preachers arrested for preaching the gospel, for quoting the Bible on things like homosexuality and marriage. This is the direction that the hate speech policies are going. When it comes to misinformation, if you said, for example, during the height of the COVID madness, this came out of a communist Chinese laboratory, oh, that's misinformation, we're going to silence you. If you said this is transmissible, the World Health Organization said it wasn't. So as the head of YouTube at the time, Susan Wojcicki, who passed away, said, anything that goes against World Health Organization recommendations, we're going to remove from the platform. Of course, you guys were victims of that. We were victims of that. And so what they mean with this is to entirely shut down all alternative forms of communication for citizens to become well-informed on the issues. And again, it's enshrined right in this Pact for the Future that was adopted on Sunday by every national government in the world.
Completely, completely insane. Of course, we know that the First World War led to the League of Nations. The Second World War, the outcome, you know, major outcome of that was the UN was founded. Now here we are on the cusp of the Third World War with the UN essentially announcing its intention to become a one world government. But I understand we have a video here from you guys about the UN denying that its power grab was an attack on sovereignty. So let's go to that now, and then we'll come back and get your comments on the other side. Again, you can find all this information on Alex's Twitter feed at AlexNewman_JOU with Andrew Mueller at Andrew1Mueller, that's M-U-L-L-E-R, on X. And of course, you can go to the Liberty Sentinel to find these stories and articles and videos and so much more. But let's go now to this video about the UN denying that it's trying to become a one world government when it obviously is. Let's watch.
Yes, sir.
Hi. To the extent that
if you
the,
could just
oh,
identify.
Alex Newman with the New American Media.
Yeah.
To the extent that the Summit of the Future and the Pact for the Future have been mentioned by policymakers at all in the United States, it's been very negative. We had a congressional delegation last week, had a press conference say this was an attack on our sovereignty. And last week we had 26 U.S. governors issue a statement saying that they weren't going to comply with U.N. dictates and mandates. Is the Secretary General concerned about public opposition, especially among Republicans in the United States?
Look, this is not the Pact for the Future is not about world government. It's about making an organization of independent, sovereign member states work better, right? If you look at the charter, you will see that the Secretary General has almost no authority. So it's not as if anyone is granting the Secretary General authority over governments. Clearly not. This is a deliberative body where governments come together, sovereign governments come together to try to solve problems that impacts them all, that try to deal with problems that have no borders, right? Not one country can deal with the rising seas. Not one country can deal with global pandemics. Not one country can deal with international terrorism. It's about bringing countries, sovereign, independent countries, and working together. I think the most important part is for people to be well informed and read original documents and make up their own minds.
Yeah, so translate that for us from the newspeak Orwellian gibberish that we just heard. He's talking about climate change and pandemics and terrorism. which is very ironic since they're the ones that sold all of our manufacturing to China, which has no environmental controls. And they're the ones that are, founding the opposition to Assad that morphed into ISIS. And you know, they're the ones that are releasing pandemics that they created in labs. So essentially they're saying we need to deal with all these problems that we're creating. And that's why, you know, we need to all work together as sovereign states under one authority. That's totally not a global government. I mean, are people falling for this? Come on.
I think the UN press corps has a remarkable ability to engage in this cognitive dissonance where on the one hand, oh, no, it's not a world government. On the other hand, oh, the UN must solve all global problems.
Right.
You can't believe both things at the same time. And yet, clearly, that's what's going on there. But I want to encourage people to do exactly what Stefan Dujarric, the spokesman for the Secretary General, just said. Go read the original documents yourself and determine for yourself what is really going on here. I want to quote a couple of things from there quick, Harrison. This is right in the Pact for the Future. It says, we recognize that the multilateral system and its institutions, with the United Nations and its charter at the center, must be strengthened to keep pace with a changing world. Says we renew our commitment to multilateralism, which is a synonym for globalism, and international cooperation. They say a recommitment to international cooperation based on the rule of law is required. They say our challenges are deeply interconnected and exceed the capacity of any state alone. They can only be addressed collectively. That's the old global problems require global solutions. They say that... we fulfill our obligations to comply with the decisions and uphold the mandate of the International Court of Justice. We will strengthen global governance. These are all direct quotes from this Pact for the Future. They're going to strengthen tax cooperation. They're going to plot on how they're going to tax high net worth individuals. They're going to, and this is one of the biggest components of this that people should know about, Harrison, is the emergencies powers. If you go to action item 54 in this Pact for the Future, it deals with emergencies. And for the context of what all that means, you need to go back to the original policy brief that Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General, put out in the beginning of 2023. And so action item 54, I'll just read from it. It says, we recognize the need for a more coherent, cooperative, coordinated, and multidimensional international response to complex global shocks and the central role of the United Nations in this regard. Then they say that the Secretary General must devise new ways to strengthen the United Nations system response to complex global shocks. So again, to understand all that, you need to go back to the policy brief that it came from, Our Common Future, policy brief number 2, put out by Secretary General Guterres in the beginning of 2023. And it says, in the event of a global emergency, the Secretary General must declare a global emergency with no help from anyone, no advisors, no board, no committee, no nothing. And once that happens, it says, all stakeholders, nations, governments, businesses, religious institutions must defer to the primary decision-making authority of multilateral agencies. In other words, the UN and its constellation of agencies. So they're building a world government right in front of our eyes. They admitted when they built the UN that the eventual goal was to turn it into a world government. You go back to 1950. Secretary of State John Foster Dulles wrote a book, War or Peace, where he said the UN is right now at a primitive stage. Eventually, we're going to turn it into what he said, world federation, world government with teeth in it. And he imagined that you wouldn't even have to change the UN charter to make that come about. So that's what this is all aimed at, and people need to understand it.
Very clearly, and just like everything, they call you crazy for calling them globalists until, you know, and just like the deep state, right? The deep state, that's crazy. Give it 3 years and suddenly it's, well, the deep state does exist and it's good and necessary. So they're just doing the same thing here. I believe we have Andrew Mueller back. I'm sorry that our connection is no good here, obviously, partly due to the hurricane. If we keep messing up, we'll have to have Andrew back on because I want to hear what you have to say, but we're just having some technical issues that we can't really control. But now that we have you, Mr. Mueller, talk to us about the way that this is being implemented just ahead of what looks an awful lot like World War III. At Jens Stoltenberg of NATO basically saying, look, this is more dangerous. You know, the world is in more danger than we've been in, you know, 100 years. They seem to be preparing for World War III. I mean, do you think World War III is necessary to bring this about, or just how do you think the geopolitical goings-on play into the desires of the UN to serve as a one-world unelected government?
Yeah, I think you're right, Harrison. Something big is coming. And what I think is going on here is I think the UN has a sense of desperation, and it could be manufactured desperation. They're definitely known for doing something like that. But Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the UN, opened his speech at the General Assembly with, "We're bringing multilateralism, globalism back from the brink." Mm. And the Summit of the Future Pact for the Future document says time and time again that they're trying to rebuild an erosion of trust. They're trying to rebuild their authority. They're trying to rebuild their credibility. And I think what's going on is they're trying to expand the UN authority, particularly in the UN Security Council, to try to double down for some sort of a horrible event, whether that be nuclear war, whether that be a poly crisis with a cyber pandemic or some sort of other virus, or maybe a new currency like a central bank digital currency, whatever it may be. They are trying to double down on their authority, create and reform the UN into what they're calling UN 2.0. They want to revitalize this thing to turbocharge the sustainable development goals. And I think they're doing just that. Now, the reason I think they're kind of having this sense of desperation why they're turbocharging things is that we have the largest pushback against the UN, in my opinion, that we've maybe ever had. And the reason I say that's for a few things. Right now, we have two bills in Congress. We have H.R. 6645, which was introduced by Chip Roy, the Defund Act. And we also have a sister bill by Mike Lee. That's S.R. 3428, also called the Defund Act, to get us out of the United Nations. Never had that. Sister bills, both houses of Congress. And we have 24 U.S. governors who have come out and signed a letter to Joe Biden saying we're not going to comply with the UN WHO guidelines. We're not going to go by these edicts any longer. And you also have a populist uprising in the West. You have individuals like Viktor Orban in Hungary, who's been a real strong pillar for national sovereignty. You have people like Javier Milei and Donald Trump who are saying, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be giving away our national sovereignty to an institution like the United Nations. And even the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR, has a whole page on their website talking about how Donald Trump stripped hundreds of millions of dollars in funding from the UN. And ultimately, I think they're feeling a little insecure, a little damaged, not defeated, but there is the biggest pushback against the UN politically that we've seen in a long time. And there's an event coming. I don't know what that event is. It could be nuclear war. It could be poly crisis, cyber pandemic, what have you. It doesn't really matter what it is, but it's a big thing that's coming down the pike. My opinion, they're preparing to discredit people who believe in national sovereignty. Maybe Donald Trump gets elected, big event happens, and they say this is the natural end to the America First, pro-America, national sovereignty ideology. Therefore, we need to have accountability at the global level and then insert the United Nations. So this whole UN 2.0 bolstering their ability to be able to control, I think it's preparing for something big. And the information element of this plays into a huge part where they're cleaning the informational ecosystems and removing it from toxins. Part of the failure of COVID and the reason it didn't go as far as it could have was alternative media, just like InfoWars, just like LibertySentinel.org. People were getting more information apart from the CDC, the WHO, and they don't want that to happen again. They don't want alternative media to step in during the next crisis. So they're accounting for the downfalls and they're preparing to really bolster the walls in case, you know, this big event happens. And I think that that's exactly what they're preparing for at the Summit of the Future.
No, I think so, too. And I think that that assumption is based off of history. And stay with us. We'll do another 30 minutes on the other side. And I want to show you a video that goes along with that, with exactly what you're talking about. It's a video of U.S. Congressman Ron Johnson talking about what we've known since 2019, Event 201, the pre-planning of the pandemic, the complete failure for the international bodies like the WHO or the UN to do anything positive whatsoever. They're very good at censoring information and, you know, coordinating talking points with mainstream media, but not super good at stopping the diseases that they release into the world. So we'll show you that on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
Obviously, silver's doing way better than gold in growth, and it's way undervalued. That's a fact. Why then are the central banks mainly hoarding gold?
Well, because there's simply not enough silver. Right? It's like if you've got central banks that start allocating into silver when it's $30 an ounce and they want to have it be part of their reserves, it's like, okay, there's not enough silver in the world to do that. Right? So they have to do gold because it's $2,400 an ounce, not $30 an ounce. right? So this is why
they've
central
got so many quadrillions of fake money. There's not there's too much fiat to even buy the silver, which I would say then means silver still will always be the thing that grows the most.
Oh, so silver historically, the numbers prove out that when gold is in a bull market, which it is, we're near all-time highs, silver does better than gold. So silver grows faster. And there's a reason why. Silver and gold both act as barometers to government distrust, right? It's the worse things get, the better financial metals do. They're a flight for safety. But what silver has that gold doesn't is it's a manufacturing metal. It's used in industry. So in aerospace, in defense, in electronics, in solar power, electric vehicles, all of that. The demand for silver is through the roof, Alex, and we're just taking advantage of that. And imagine what silver will do with Trump being president, somebody who actually grows the economy rather than having a stagnant economy. The industrial need for silver is absolutely going to explode.
Now, you're right. Silver is the closest thing to a silver bullet. That's why they call it a silver bullet. People should go to kpm.com/gold right now and get silver now. We'll be right back.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
Vitamin Mineral Fusion, 40% off, even though it's our number one bestseller. All the vitamins, all the minerals, all of the amino acids, everything you need that's essential. And let me tell you what essential means. You need air, you die in 4 minutes without it. You need water, you die in 5 days without it. You need food, you die on average in a month without it. Because what's in the food? The vitamins and the minerals and the amino acids. This has everything that's essential. All the vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. Tastes great. Concentrate. Put a little scoop in a pitcher of water. Take it to work with you. Drink it morning, noon, and night. Give it to your kids, your neighbors. Really important for old folks because their guts don't absorb as much. Vitamin Mineral Fusion sells all day at full price. It is 40% off as part of the sale going right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And then, discounts right now on full spectrum CBD gummies, super strong, lowers inflammation, so good for your whole body, and so good for mental relaxed clarity. It's not a sedative, but it's like you're awake, but you're relaxed. The gummies are incredible. I like to take them before I go to bed at night. And then on top of that, we have the 1,000 milligram CBD under the InfoWars MD label that is private labeled again by the same top folks, ladies and gentlemen. They sell it for $45 more on average than we do, and their competitors for even more. 1,000 milligram real full spectrum CBD is sold at elite shops and at doctor's offices for $150 all day long. It's a good deal if you get it for $60-$70, and that's what we're selling it for. In fact, it's an insanely good deal. You can't really find anybody else selling high quality at that price. So, full spectrum CBD at InfoWarsStore.com in the gummies and the liquid tincture, and so many other great products at InfoWarsStore.com, or call toll free 888-253-3139. Get your vitamin mineral fusion. Check out the InfoWars MD line and more at InfoWarsStore.com, and I thank you all for your support.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. Final segment of American Journal today. I'm joined by Alex Newman and Andrew Moeller. You can follow Alex on X at AlexNewman_JOU. And Andrew is on X at Andrew1Moeller. And one thing you guys mentioned at the end there is the UN's desperation to try to regain some of the trust they've lost over the recent past. Very similar things we've heard from the mainstream media. They're very concerned about the loss of trust, and their solution is to silence anybody contradicting them, when the obvious problem that they should be trying to solve is that they keep lying and everybody knows it. So they can just stop lying at any point and people would start trusting them again. They can't get over that. I want to go to this clip from Ron Johnson from over the weekend, U.S. Congressman Ron Johnson, talking about what we've known forever, that Event 201 in October of 2019 set out and established the control grid that would be implemented as soon as the COVID pandemic hit U.S. shores. And they did that very effectively. They just didn't do anything effective at all to mitigate the threat or actually stop the disease from spreading. But let's go to Ron Johnson here, laying it out on Maria Bartiromo's show.
I mean, it's just extraordinary to me that, you know, the government was working with social media to amplify lies and suppress truth and has been doing so repeatedly. Why couldn't the American people know that, you know, there were other alternatives to treat COVID? Why can't the American people know that there were side effects with the vaccine?
This is all pre-planned by an elite group of people. That's what I'm talking about. Event 201 that occurred in late 2019, prior to the rest of us knowing about this pandemic. Again, this is very concerning in terms of what has happened, what is happening, what continues to be planned for our loss of freedom. Again, it needs to be exposed, but unfortunately, there are very few people, even in Congress, that are willing to take a look at this. They all push the vaccine. They don't want to, you know, be made aware of the fact that the vaccines might have caused injuries, might have caused death. So many people just simply don't want to admit they were wrong, and they're going to do everything they can to make sure that they're not proven wrong. We're up against a very powerful group of people here, Maria. But, you know, fortunately, you say, what can we do? Well, you know, we do have reporters like yourself, like John Solomon, other people that have the courage to report the truth against the mainstream media and against the narrative. But that's the only way this is going to be solved, is we need the truth to be exposed. We need more Americans to listen to the truth, to be exposed to the truth, to pull their heads out of the sand, quite honestly, open up their eyes and understand what has happened in this country. We are going down a very dangerous path, but as a path is being laid out and planned by an elite group of people that want to take total control over our lives. And that's what they're doing bit by bit. They do it by increasing massive government spending, increase the size of government, takeover of the WHO. These amendments that are coming up that are going to be voted on in 2024 on the WHO are frightening, and they really risk taking away all of our sovereignty. People have to awaken to the dangers of the moment.
Yeah, pretty powerful stuff from Ron Johnson. He wildly claims there's an elite group of people pre-planned pandemic response to take away American freedoms. And if you watch Event 201, that's all they talked about was how to, you know, stop people from speaking out against them. It's totally absurd. And of course, Andrew Mueller and Alex Newman were there on the floor of the UN asking questions about what was coming next. And you guys are some of the journalists that Ron Johns is talking about there. And your work can be found at thenewamerican.org and libertysentinel.com. Or is it thenewamerican.com, libertysentinel.org? I think I have that right, right? What can we do beyond speak out about it and support the organizations that are speaking out about it, Andrew?
Well, I think two things that people can do, Harrison, is I think that one, you got to be informed. That's number one. You have to be able to know what's going on. You have to be a watchman on the wall. You have to read these articles, watch these videos, know what the UN has in store for you. You know, I use the example of, having like a wallet with $100 in it. And if you don't know you have $100 in your wallet and somebody pickpockets you, what's the difference? You didn't know you had it in the first place.
Right.
But if you know what you had in your wallet and somebody took it from you, then you know what's gone. And the same is true with our rights. If you don't know what your rights are, if you don't know what your freedoms are, if you don't know what your liberties are, what your country has, then somebody can just come and take it and you're ignorant. So you have to know what America is all about. You have to read the Constitution. You have to know that we have a Constitution that explicitly sets up state sovereignty, national sovereignty, and also individual sovereignty. And there's checks and balances. We don't have to, it's actually illegal to be involved with a global organization like the United Nations under our Constitution. So you have to know that. And then the second thing I think Americans can do is they can support legislation to get us out of the UN. As I mentioned earlier, we've got two great bills on the House floor and on the Senate bill floor right now, SR 3428 and HR 6645. Also, if your governor is not one of those 24 governors who signed the letter to Joe Biden through the Republican Governors Association, the RGA, saying we're not going to support the UN, we're not going to support the WHO. You need to be calling your governor and you need to say, hey, what are you going to do to protect our state from the globalists who want to control our health, our faith, our families, and our freedoms? So there are tons of action items for us to do as Americans. It's just a matter of waking up, organizing it, and doing it. And I think we have the best shot we've ever had, but we're at one of the final exits on the highway to destruction before this country goes off the cliff. So you have to wake up and you have to act now. So those are two things I think people can do immediately after they're done listening to the broadcast today.
Yeah, and you know, what a good way to put it, the last exit before the road to destruction, or you know, on the road to destruction. That's exactly right. And yet the UN, you know, Alex, as you were talking about, feels like they're sort of on the last leg. So it seems like there's some sort of inflection point coming that either we destroy this globalism once and for all, and they have to, you know, rebuild from nothing now that we're aware of what they're up to, or they slam the you know, jail cell shut, lock the door, and we're in here forever. The inflection point seems to be coming. Tell us, you know, what's your takeaway from Ron Johnson talking about Event 201 and the lack of trust that the UN is trying to overcome right now?
Well, Ron Johnson has been one of the brightest spots in Congress. I am for one, so thankful that we have men like him on Capitol Hill. We actually did an excellent hour-long interview of him for The New American. I hope people will go listen to it. He just kind of drops all pretense and just points out very clearly, we do have an elite that wants to destroy America, that wants to destroy humanity. And it's good that there are people at that level who are now willing to speak out, and there will be more. To your point, you know, Robert Welch, the founder of the John Birch Society, which actually owns The New American, he said that by the time we got close to the end, the globalists would have to do, he called them the insiders, would have to do the equivalent of running through the streets naked to try to get to the finish line. And we're there now, right? They're running through the streets naked. Everybody can see what they are doing. And so the inflection point, as you called it, is coming. It's approaching very, very rapidly. We're coming to a fork in the road where humanity is going to have to figure out, are we going to go toward one world political, religious, and economic tyranny, or are we going to reinvigorate support for self-government, national sovereignty, individual liberty on the model of America's founding fathers? Those are really the two choices before us. And I would add one thing to what Andrew said. I agree 100% with everything he said, but our children are actually at the center of the battle. People don't realize that. If you read the Pact for the Future, the outcome document from this terrible summit that just took place, dozens of references to education and school. Right. If you read the 2030 agenda, which they say is actually the roadmap for achieving their vision for the planet, one of the 17 sustainable development goals deals exclusively with education, goal number 4. And it says all children, all learners will be so brainwashed that they will not just submit to the UN's agenda, the globalism, the feminism, the destruction of national sovereignty, the fake human rights, the global citizenship, they will promote it. And so the totalitarians are playing the long game. And for too long, Americans have said, well, we'll just vote and then we'll go back to watching our football game. That's not going to cut it anymore, folks. Your forefathers had to put their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the line so that you could live free today. Thankfully, we're not yet at the point where we're going to have to put our lives and our fortunes and our sacred honor on the line. Not yet, at least. But we are going to have to make a sacrifice. If you think you're going to, you know, watch football for 4 hours and then in your spare 15 minutes make a post on Facebook and we're going to save the country, you're kidding yourself. We've got to think long term. We've got to be strategic. And so, folks, protect your children, protect your grandchildren from the diabolical indoctrination that the UN is now openly talking about. Right. One of the only booths that Andrew and I saw at the Pact for the Future, this whole summit was about SDG 4. It was a UNESCO booth talking about the importance of sustainable development goal number 4. If you read the 2030 or the Agenda 21 passed in 1992 by every government in the world, including George H.W. New World Order Bush, they actually say in Chapter 36, education is the crucial element of this plan. It's got to be infused into everything, spirituality, brainwashing. So, folks, protect your children, and we have a historic opportunity right now to stop these people. We've got a mass awakening happening in the United States. We've got Congress. We've got states. We've got local governments saying we're not going to comply with this. Now's the time for us to double down and go full speed ahead because time is running short.
Yeah, it's sort of a decentralized attack, and it needs a decentralized response. Obviously, you have the UN and these major supranational organizations doing it. It's also being implemented on the national level, and you've got actors in the state governments implementing this, and actors in the local government engaged in this, and the giant swath of NGOs working in tandem to bring this about. But we've had incredible success just exposing these people and talking about it. And one thing, Andrew, I know you mentioned, like, people have to know their rights. That's such a good point of, losing your wallet. And if you didn't know you had money, what's the loss? And almost more important than that, and tying into education that Alex was talking about, is why we have these rights, why the rights are important. I feel like now people just don't. They don't even understand why they would want free speech. They're like, it's just dangerous and who cares? And I'll just listen to the authorities. How do we convey to people that not only do you have these rights, but they're like important and good and they mean that you can think your own thoughts and be a human being? Like, I think we've failed in imparting the importance of these rights, let alone their existence. So, what's your take on that and just the way education plays into all of this?
Huge point. Ultimately, Harrison, I believe it's a spiritual thing. I believe it's something that goes to the core of our beings as humans. I believe that ultimately everybody is going to have to come to terms with that at some point in their life, and they're going to accept that or reject that. I'm a Christian. I believe my rights come from God, and that's what our founding fathers believed. They believed that rights came from God, that governments, and I'm quoting here from the Declaration of Independence, were instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that governments were instituted to protect certain inalienable rights that among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, they didn't do what the UN does and try to list every single human right that you could think of. The problem with doing that is that humans are messed up. Humans are wicked. They forget things. They twist things. They are manipulative. So you can't list every single right a human being has. And the founding fathers understood that it's not the government's place. God gives rights to his creation and government's instituted to protect those. So that's what's made America special. So I think that the importance of educating people is to tell them, look, you have a relationship with your creator, and your creator is not the government. The giver of rights is not the government. It's not our fellow man that's elevated to political positions. So I think that's how we can get people to believe that this is important and to educate them, because ultimately, if your rights come from God and government's instituted to protect those rights, not give them, not grant them, not take them away, no, just protect, then that means we all have a responsibility. We all have a part to play in our republic. And I think that is what's made America so great, is that people felt a duty, they felt a responsibility to play a role in their government, because they weren't only acting on behalf of their own interests, but also the interests of their fellow man, because we have to be watchmen on the walls, guarding against an over-encroaching government. And I think that that gives meaning and purpose to our lives. And I think that that's a huge thing that we've lost in this country, is that we've become dependent. We've thought, how can the government serve us? What can the government do for us? Instead of, what can we do for each other? What can we do to make our world a better place? How can we limit government and streamline it to make it so efficient that it doesn't impact our lives, but just does the bare minimum in a sufficient manner to protect our liberties from those who'd wish to take it? And I think being in the media and doing what we're doing right now is a huge role in that. And there's a responsibility that comes with it. But unless and until the American people wake up and realize that what's going on at the governmental level isn't just policy, it isn't just politics, but it's a spiritual war. At the UN, they have a meditation room and a concentration room to pray to pagan gods. It goes all the way back to Alice Bailey and her Lucifer publishing company that she started. True story. And they believe that this is spiritual. A lot of people at the UN, they think this is a spiritual thing that they're doing. And why would they have a meditation room? Why would they have all this weird Marxist, humanist, religious art if they didn't believe it was spiritual? So they're going to play chess while we're playing checkers, unless we wake up and recognize, hey, this isn't just politics. This isn't just policy. This really is evil versus good. Wickedness versus righteousness. And we have to start thinking in spiritual terms here. And when it comes to rights, they come from God, not the UN. So those sort of conversations, I think, really preface the importance of reporting on this, because it's not just simply politics as usual. This really does cut to the heart and soul of our nation and us as individuals. And no one can stay silent on this. No one can stay silent on this. We have to talk about it.
Yeah. And great seeing Ron Johnson point this out, but we need like every conservative recognizing the real fate of humanity that hangs in the balance here. Again, Alex and Andrew, both of y'all were at the New York City UN headquarters during this Pact of the Future. And tons of great reporting on it, thenewamerican.com, libertysentinel.org, conversations, articles, investigations, just incredible stuff, you know, for people that want to look more into this. What was something that was like maybe unexpected? I know, Alex, you've been to some of these, but was there anything about this iteration of the UN that stood out to you as different than before, or just there being on the ground? We weren't there. So what was it like experiencing the UN future pact meeting where all these governments signed on to this future enslavement pact? What stood out to you being on the ground and in person there?
Well, one of the things that really struck me as different from past summits was the total lack of coverage of this, Harrison. So I've been going to UN summits for about 15 years now, starting at the COP15 in Copenhagen, the UN climate summit in 2009. And there's always some press coverage in the run-up to these things. And yet, when it came to this summit of the future, which the UN had been talking about in grandiose, almost blasphemous terms for 2 years, not one peep from the mainstream media in the United States. We started exposing it early last year, and yet nothing from ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, the AP, Reuters, until the Pact for the Future was passed. That's when the floodgates opened and a lot of articles came out. And my hypothesis is, look, they're realizing that even when you lie to people, even when you tell them that this is great and it's wonderful and it's going to create a better future and we're all going to sing Kumbaya and live with rainbows and unicorns, Americans are well-informed enough, they're suspicious enough of these institutions, that if they had even known this thing was coming, there would have been a major backlash. And so total radio silence on this. We did have somebody high up in the UN communications architecture leak a memo to us where Melissa Fleming and other senior UN communications bosses were actually talking about how to market this to the public, how to market multilateralism, how to market the pact for the future. They said there were advertising agencies standing by to help them flood the internet, is the term that the memo used, with propaganda on this. And yet in the United States, total radio silence. So for me, that's a very actually encouraging development, because what it shows is that they realize that even with their spin, even with their propaganda version of events, they know Americans are way too suspicious now to be sold this bill of goods. So I'm really encouraged by that. And, you know, Andrew really talked a little bit about the incredible hostility to journalism and to journalists. I had never experienced anything that dramatic. I mean, I've been to these things again for 15 years now, and they're never welcoming to people with real questions. But this was on a whole nother level, right? You see some B-roll here of the police shutting down a journalist just trying to do some reporting. Inside, we had minders walking us around. Two out of our three minders were actual communist Chinese, right? Just terrible, terrible treatment for journalists. Nobody wanted to talk. And I think this is a sense of where the world will go if these totalitarians get their way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just insane. Journalism on lockdown at the United Nations by Andrew Mueller. That's the article from Liberty Sentinel. Andrew, this is your first time at the UN. Is that what stood out to you, or just walks through your experience being there on the ground? And by the way, it's like, look at these guys. It's, you know, I could maybe understand it if you had some rabble rouser, you know, big guy coming in and yelling. But like, you guys are totally respectful, totally professional, certified. You've got the press pass. There's no reason to treat you any differently. But of course, they know that you oppose them. So, of course, you're going to be treated differently. So Andrew, I mean, what was your experience with the anti-journalist sentiment at the UN? Did you feel that as well?
100%. They had a huge tent, Harrison, a huge tent, and it had TVs. I don't know, maybe 20, 30 TVs in it. And it was playing UN TV. This is a live stream you can get on YouTube. This is a live stream you can get anywhere on the internet. And all the journalists from around the world are sitting at their desks, watching the TV, typing away on their computers in the press tent, which is far removed on the UN premises from where the General Assembly meets and where all the action's happening. That's where the journalists stayed. There are hardly any American media there. And when you would go out and you would wander around and you try to get questions, like Alex said, communist Chinese escort would come and say, hey, you can't be in this area. The UN police would come and say, hey, you can't interview this person. And we talked with somebody who is from a country that I won't disclose, with an outlet I won't disclose. And they said, I was interviewing one of the UN youth delegates, asking him simple questions. UN police came, told me I can't do that, can't have an interview. And the other thing that struck me as interesting, Harrison, I grabbed one of these just for illustration's sake. I'd never wear it. But this is the UN Sustainable Development Goal SDG pin. And they were handing these out, and the journalists were wearing them. So you have the journalists wearing the jerseys of the home team when they're supposed to be reporting about the UN and being the watchdogs, right, of what's going on. They were wearing the pin showing that they were on the right side of the story in the eyes of the UN. So that was really interesting. But one thing and one little story I'll tell very briefly was that Alex and I were trying to get some interviews. We're trying to talk to people, and they assigned to us a Chinese communist escort. She accidentally took us up to the 27th floor of the UN, where Antonio Guterres meets with all the different prime ministers, presidents, potates and stuff to interview us or to meet with them. She accidentally took us up to that floor. We're walking around high level UN security. They see our press passes. They freak out. They escort us out. And we started talking with the different escorts about, you know, why do you like the UN? Why are you working here? And some of them were just interns from various countries. Some of them were higher up. They really kind of believed in the cause. But there was just this total anti-journalist sentiment. We tried to take pictures, tried to go to some photo shoots between the Secretary General and some of the different leaders of foreign countries. We were met with very weird reactions from people. Why would you want to get a picture? Why are you here? You can get the pictures online for free. Just questioning our motives, questioning why we were doing journalism. So there was a huge anti-journalistic sentiment. Every time you'd wander away from the media tent, they'd say, oh, the media tent's back that way. It's like a little kid waking up from their bedroom and the parents saying, no, go back to bed, go back to your room. So huge anti-journalist sentiment. And you have to ask, what are they hiding? Why don't they want the media there? And why would you give out press passes? Why would you invite these people to come unless you wanted questions? And I think the answer is most of it was foreign state media, government backed, weren't asking any hard questions. So that was very eye opening.
Right. They were there to funnel and to launder the lies into a consumable form for their readers and audience. And of course, you know, when you talk about the UN, these are the people funneling the immigrants. These are the people proposing the censorship. These are the people locking down the entire world and taking us to the brink of total collapse based on the flu. These are the ones doing all of it. These are the people that want you to be constantly listened to. Right. You've got Ford now saying, yeah, we're going to listen to your conversations in our cars through microphones. They're going to listen through any sort of microphone they can get, but God forbid you ask them a single question. They are above, you know, your knowledge, but everything you do, they want on a giant spreadsheet to determine whether you're a threat or not. Incredible work. Alex Newman at Alex Newman underscore J-O-U on X, Andrew Mueller at Andrew 1 Mueller on X. And of course, you can find their incredible reporting, the articles, the videos and everything at thenewamerican.com and libertysentinel.org. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining me and for all the great work that you do.
Thank you, Harrison. Thanks, Harrison. An honor, and God bless you, sir.
God bless you, and man, thank God we have people like that going and actually getting the story for themselves. Folks, that's about going to do it for us here at American Journal. God willing, we'll be out for the next 2 weeks, as we should be expecting a baby today or tomorrow. But if not, I'll be here tomorrow as long as I can be. Alex Jones, of course, begins in just about 90 seconds after this commercial break. You've got to go to InfoWarsStore.com to support us, as this month, October 2024, looks like it's gearing up to be one of the most decisive periods of time in all of humanity. Will we succumb to the demands of the globalists and be slaves for their wars, or will humanity break free and shatter their grip once and for all? October will decide. Stay with us.
Today's conspiracy theories, tomorrow's truths.
Some of these conspiracy theories have turned out to be true.
Which ones?
the Trump-Russia witch hunt, Jeffrey Epstein, JFK assassination, the misuse of the Patriot Act, the Iraq war, the weapons of mass destruction, the war in Ukraine, the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline, the open border migration caravans, the climate change scam, chemtrails, and HARP, and 9/11 being an inside job, and the Internet of Things surveillance grid, and PFAs, and chemicals in the water turning everyone gay, and the 2020 election being stolen, and January 6th being filled with undercover feds, and Bilderberg, and Bohemian Grove, and global government, not to mention gain-of-function research, and the threat of China, and collapsing birth rates, and defund the police, and George Soros, and mail-in ballots, and big tech censorship, and disinformation agencies, and Obama's birth certificate, and probably some others I can't think of. I mean, so a few of them. I guess a couple of them have been true.
You will meet so many amazing people wearing the shirt. I'd say you'll get probably 50 compliments before you get one person screaming at you.
Donald J. Trump is now President of the United States.
But it's an adventure to wear any of these shirts, but particularly this one. Get this design and so many others. They're limited edition at thealexshowstore.com. Keep us on air in our fight against the globalist. And I want to thank you so much for your support, because literally, when you call in thanking me on air, I say stop, because I'm thanking you. I love fighting the globalist. This is what I do. We've had such a huge effect together. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I encourage you now to go to thealexjonesstore.com and be sure to enter for the free truck and $10,000 and buy more product, support the broadcast, and get entered 5 or 10 times, depending on the day, each time you buy a product. This new initiative is so important to the future. So everybody, if you support what we're doing and want to get great shirts and ball caps at the same time, go to thealexjonesstore.com. And I almost forgot, most of these shirts come in multiple colors.